We're going to look at this question together. On the sheets, you've got phone number you can text in. I want to talk about this topic. Text in questions. We'll try our best to answer the questions. We can have questions from the floor as well. Tonight, we're looking at this question of how can you believe in God in a world of suffering? This question, as I mentioned this morning, is applicable for absolutely everybody. Because absolutely every person upon this world will suffer, some to a great degree, some to a far lesser degree. But every single person will and does suffer. And there's two main ways for us to answer this question. Two ways for us to hear this question. How can you believe in God in a world of suffering? Here's the first way we can look at this question. You may think of it as being at the proverbial armchair. Imagine you're sitting by the fire, you've got a dram in your hand, and you're talking about suffering as some philosophical topic, something which is over there. You might be asking this question this evening from the armchair, or rather, you might be asking this question this evening from the wheelchair, where suffering is not a philosophical discussion. Rather, it is something you are very, very aware of in every moment of your life. Now, this evening, especially in the time, I'm not going to be able to give you an answer for your specific suffering. However, for this evening, which I hope is part of a longer conversation together, we can see how Christianity helps give meaning to your suffering, where other ways of looking at the world simply fall far short of doing that. And not only does Christianity give meaning to our suffering, but also we see the God who cares about our suffering. As I said earlier, we'll have a time of Q&A afterwards. Love to try and answer some questions from the floor. Feel free to text in your questions also. You might remember the famous interview from 10 years ago, television personality, atheist, former rector at my old university, Dundee, Stephen Fry. He was interviewed on Irish television and he was asked, what would he say to God if it turned out God existed after all? You might remember the interview, you can see it on YouTube later on this evening. And Stephen Fry did not hold back. How dare you? How dare you create a world to which there is, how dare you create a world to which there is such misery that is not our fault? It's not right. It's utterly, utterly evil. Why should I respect a capricious, mean-minded, stupid God who creates a world that is so full of injustice and pain? That's what Stephen Fry says he would say to God if he were to meet God. And I remember sitting a few months ago in a cafe in Melrose with a young man, middle-aged man. That's his exact comment to me as well. These exact words resonated with him, and this is what he said to me. As I said at the start, the problem of suffering, it's not just an academic question for philosophers, for theologians, but it is a deeply personal and painful subject for us. I belong to a church community which is full of people who have experience of suffering. Cuts and bruises, yes. But marriages and loss, broken bones and broken hearts, death of loved ones that are young, death of loved ones that are older, cancers, depressions, self-harm, anxieties. Yet what amazes me is that these people in their pain are not driven from God, but driven to God. Now if you stop and think about it, you and I, we live in a culture which in many ways is insulated from suffering. Insulated from suffering far more than people have ever been before. Insulated by our advances in medicine, in technology, by our relative prosperity, by the welfare system that surrounds us. And yet as a society, we are more insulated and yet we struggle more to cope with suffering and explain the problem of evil than ever before. Why is that? Part of the reason is we live and breathe in the air of a secular society. That worldview that says that all there is to life is the here and now. Suffering then in this way of thinking is, well, it has no purpose. It's an inconvenient fact of nature that frustrates our ability to realize our own meaning and happiness in life. It gets in the way of that. And yet our struggles with suffering suggest that there is more to life than simply the here and now. One philosopher observes that only we humans think of pain as not just a fact of nature, but think of pain as a moral problem. We don't speak of other things this way, do we, like the weather? Scotland's rain isn't a matter of right or wrong, of good or evil. However, when we encounter suffering, when we see evidence of evil in the world, we recognize that it is wrong. Secular humanism is simply unable to help us make sense of this experience. It's a bit dated now, I know, but let me quote Richard Dawkins. He once wrote that in a universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt, other people are going to get lucky, and you won't find any rhyme or reason to it, nor any justice. The universe that we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is, at bottom, no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but pitiless indifference. Is that how you feel about your suffering? Pitiless indifference. As you go to BGH, as you go to the Macmillan Ward, as you go to the Western General in Edinburgh, as you go to the Krem, as you go to the graveside, is that how you feel about your suffering? Pitiless indifference? Of course not. The suffering, great or small, it matters to us. Whether it's ill health or just the cruel words of a child on a playground, it matters. Christopher Hitchens, one of the most prolific authors of this way of thinking, one of her best-selling authors until his death in 2011, wrote about his experience of dying slowly from cancer. You can read it in his book called Mortality, and he writes in this book, he writes, "To the dumb question, why me? The cosmos barely bothers to return the reply, why not? I felt swamped by passivity and impotence, dissolving into powerlessness like a sugar lump in water." See, in this way of looking at the world, perhaps the way you look at the world, the way that most of my friends look at the world, that is all we are. Just atoms. We are like a sugar lump dissolving in water. In other words, stuff just happens. Because there isn't anything outside of the material world, there is no standard outside of us which we can measure ourselves against to say, this isn't how it should be. No, there just should be. There just is. We just exist. What Christopher Hitchens says is that as an atheist, suffering doesn't have any significance. It just is. Sit down, shut up, and man up. It just is. You can't complain about it, because there is no blueprint for how the world ought to be. Hopefully you can see that's just wrong. Whether suffering to you is from the armchair or the wheelchair, so to speak, hopefully you look at that and go, no. That does not make sense to the world. That does not make sense of my suffering. That is not satisfying. No one writes songs about that, do they? No one writes songs about heartbreak, about tragedy, and says it just is what it is. There's no number one hits to go like that, is there? Because of course that doesn't resonate with us. It doesn't make sense of our life. While the songs from bands like Coldplay make much more sense. When you try your best but you don't succeed. When you get what you want, but not what you need. When you feel so tired, but you can't sleep. stuck in reverse, and the tears come streaming down your face when you lose something you can't replace, when you love someone but it goes to waste. Could it be worse? That makes sense. That begins to make sense. That begins to resonate with what's going on in our hearts. It's beautiful lyrics. But is it true? Think for yourself, apart from the fact that suffering feels wrong, if there is no overarching purpose imbued into life, what is there to say that pain is morally wrong? Yes, it is uncomfortable, but is it wrong? When we face a suffering caused by tsunamis, by war, by cancer, we cannot say in this way of viewing the world that it is not how it should be. Because in this way of viewing the world, there is no ought. There only is. To go with what Christopher Hitchens says, murder, a sugar lump dissolving in water. Bullying at school, a sugar lump dissolving in water. Floods, a sugar lump dissolving in water. Miscarriage, a sugar lump dissolving in water. Again, I'd like you to think at this point, does that fit with your experience of pain? Does it seem to you that suffering is just an acceptable part of your experience of life? Surely the answer is no. In suffering, we feel wronged. We know things shouldn't be this way. We want justice. You see, we instinctively know that we live in a moral universe with moral laws and standards. And there is, of course, no moral law apart from a moral lawgiver. Put simply by a former skeptic, C.S. Lewis, he was a good lad. He wrote, "My argument against God was that the universe seemed so cruel and unjust. But how had I got this idea of just and unjust? A man does not call a line crooked unless he has some idea of a straight line." So this question of suffering, far from disproving God exists, actually requires that God exists. We only recognize this question that suffering is out of place in this world because a good God exists who has inscribed in our consciences his good moral standards. The real question then is not why would you believe in God in the world of suffering, but the real question then is why is the world like this? There's three headings I put down for you on your handouts as you came in. I want us to walk through to understand the Christian's answer to this question. If God is truly God, then how come this world has turned out so very bad? Well, the Bible records a verdict on the world that God originally created. God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. Two thumbs up in my school assemblies. No evil. No sickness or sadness, no tears or fears. So where does evil come from? Well, it's important for us to know then what evil is and what evil is not. Just as darkness is the absence of light, just as cold is the absence of heat, evil is not a thing in and of itself God created. Rather, it is a corruption, a distortion, a perversion of something that God created. Suffering was never God's design. As one friend put it, it is not due to a manufacturing error, but user error. The Christian claim is that the world is not as it should be. At its base, because we seek to live our lives without the giver of life. People have often asked me, but couldn't God have created a world in which there never was any evil? Surely that would have been a better thing to do. Well, maybe, but I guarantee you that you would not want to live in that world. Why is that? Well, because it would ultimately be a world of robots. It would be loveless. It would be freedomless. You see, love always requires a choice for it to be genuine. Love cannot be coerced. It cannot be forced. Love requires a way to say I'm in. It requires a way to say I'm out. Think this way. If when I've been dating my wife Amy, if I put a knife to her back and said, love me, marry me, would her response be genuine? Would she really love me? Well, no, of course not. Or think of the cult film Stepford Wives. These women programmed, yes dear, yes dear, yes dear. Was that true love? No, of course not. Love always requires choice, so God gave us freedom to live for and to love him, or to reject him and live for ourselves. What we see in Genesis is that the human race chose the latter. We turned our backs on God, the giver of life. We had a way to say, I'm in, and we chose to say, I'm out. We thought that we could live without God, that would be heaven on earth. But instead, we discovered that apart from God, there is only at times hell on earth. See, that is what the Bible, in essence, calls sin. I'm sure you've heard Christians talk about sin a lot before. How to describe that with our young people? Shove off God. I'm in charge, not you. S-I-N. We live in a good world that has gone wrong. The world is not the way it's meant to be because we are not as we were made to be. But let me assure you, the God of the Bible is a God of justice. He cares about the wrongs that have been done to you. He cares about the evils that have been done against you. But this is our dilemma, and it is a big one. We are part of the problem of evil that we demand God fixes. See, if God wanted to get rid of all the suffering in the world right now, he'd have to get rid of us because we ourselves, to a greater or lesser extent, cause suffering to others at times. See, not only does God care about the wrongs that have been done to us, he also cares about the wrongs that we have done to others. And one day we'll be held accountable for those things. Some of us here might say, but I'm a humanist. I don't believe that humans are inherently evil. I guarantee you, you think right now somewhere in the world someone is doing something which is completely and utterly wrong. I guarantee you think that. Or think this way, have you ever done something yourself before and you shocked yourself? You have that quick horrible feeling in your stomach, you think, gosh, I can't believe I said that. I can't believe I thought that. I can't believe I did that. I didn't know I was capable of that. And so you rationalize it. You say, well, I only did that because so-and-so did this to me, or some other lame excuse like that. We've all been there, I'm sure. See, that's the problem. We are all capable of explaining things away as reasonable. Let me tell you a true story. There was a man called Adolf Eichmann. He was one of the Nazi architects of the Holocaust who escaped after World War II to South Africa. And he was caught in 1960. He was taken to Israel to be tried. And there he was found guilty and executed. But during his trial, there was an interesting event. See, they had to find witnesses who saw him commit the terrible crimes against humanity he was charged with. They needed to find people who saw him participate in these atrocities at these death camps. And one of the material witnesses was a man named, forgive me for his pronunciation, a man named Yehiel Deneur. And when he came in, when he saw Eichmann in the glass booth, he immediately broke down and started sobbing. He fell to the ground. And there was utter pandemonium with him in pieces. He's wailing. He's uncontrollably sobbing. The judge hammering his gavel away, calling for order. It's all very, very dramatic. You can watch it on YouTube tonight if you want. Sometime later, Deneur was interviewed by Mike Wallace on the program 60 Minutes. Wallace showed him the recording of this when he was in this courtroom of him falling down, all the pandemonium, and asked him, why did that happen? Were you perhaps overwhelmed? Was it perhaps painful memories? Was it perhaps hatred seeing this man here? Deneur said, no. And then something which should shock all Western secular people, he said that he was overcome with the realization that Eichmann was not some demon, but an ordinary human being. He went on to say that I was afraid about myself. I saw that I am capable of doing this exactly like he. See, we can choose to say that Nazis were subhuman, that we weren't capable of doing what they did, but then we have a serious problem. The scariest thing about that entire chapter of history is that it was not a few individual evil architects of it, but the complicity of vast numbers of people across a society which produced the best scholarship, the best science, and in many ways the best culture. So that makes it utterly impossible to write off the whole era as the work of a couple of isolated monsters. And besides that, to call Nazis subhuman, to call them beasts, to say they are not like us, is in fact the very reasoning that led the Nazis to their unthinkable atrocities. They too thought people were subhuman. They too thought people were beasts. Do we really want to make the same move they did? See, what we see is that evil lurks in the heart of all ordinary human beings. So actually, be more honest to say, I'm somehow the same as those who've done terrible things. I'm made of the same human stuff. There must be something deep down within me that's capable of great cruelty, and I don't want to see it. But Jesus sees it. So here's a dilemma. We demand God stops, sorts out evil, injustice, but if God returns to judge and destroy evil, well, that means he'll have to come back and destroy us too. See, Christianity provides a reason for suffering. Generally, not necessarily specifically for your specific suffering, but generally provides a reason for suffering. Secondly, provides a solution to suffering. The 18th century philosopher David Hume famously wrote about God, "Is he willing to prevent evil but not able? Then he is impotent. Is he able but not willing? Then he is malevolent. Is he both able and willing? Whence then is evil?" Hume, though, of course, is wrong. God is able and God is willing because God himself has stepped into suffering. The good news of Christianity is that God has not remained distant from our pain. He could have left us to die in the dark. He could have left us all alone. Rather, in an act of incredible love, he has pursued us. He has come into the world to rescue us in his son, Jesus. Let me demonstrate this with the words of a short playlet called The Long Silence. At the end of time, billions of people were scattered on a great plain before God's throne. Most shrank back from the brilliant light before them, but some groups near the front talked heatedly, not with cringing shame, but with belligerence. "Can God judge us? How can he know about suffering?" snapped a pert brunette. She ripped open a sleeve to reveal a tattooed number from a Nazi concentration camp. "We endured terror, beatings, torture, death." In another group, a black man lowered his collar. "What about this?" he demanded, showing an ugly rope burn. "Lynched for no crime but being black." In another crowd, a pregnant schoolgirl with sullen eyes. "Why should I suffer?" she murmured. "It wasn't my fault." Far out across the plain, there were hundreds of such groups. Each had a complaint against God for the evil and suffering which he permitted in his world. How lucky God was to live in heaven, where all was sweetness and light, where there was no weeping or fear, no hunger or hatred. What did God know of all that man had been forced to endure in this world? "For God leads a pretty sheltered life," they said. So each of these groups sent forth their leader, chosen because he'd suffered most. A Jew, a black man, a person from Hiroshima, a horribly deformed arthritic, a thalidomide child. In the center of the plane, they consulted with each other. At last, they were ready to present their case. It was rather clever. Before God could be qualified to be their judge, he must endure what they had endured. Their decision was that God should be sentenced to live on earth as a man. They said, let him be born a Jew. Let the legitimacy of his birth be doubted. Give him work so difficult even his family will think him out of his mind when he tries to do it. Let him be betrayed by his closest friends. Let him face false charges, be tried by a prejudiced jury and convicted by a cowardly judge. Let him be tortured. At the last, let him see what it means to be terribly alone. Then let him die. Let him die so that there can be no doubt that he died. Let there be a great host of witnesses to verify it. As each leader announced his portion of the sentence, loud murmurs of approval went up from the throng of people assembled. And when the last had finished pronouncing sentence, there was a long silence. No one uttered another word. No one moved. For suddenly all knew that God had already served his sentence. Friends, God is not a distant, indifferent deity to your suffering. With the death of Jesus on the cross, we see that God loves us so much, he has willingly suffered. And because of his sufferings on the cross, we can be rescued from the evil within us and around us. In the death of Jesus, as an innocent victim of evil in the world, he absorbed the punishment for our sins. And also in his sufferings, exhausted the powers of evil. In so doing, he has made it possible for us to be reconciled with God and be rescued from evil in this world. Christianity provides a reason for suffering. It provides a solution to suffering. Thirdly, and much briefer, it provides a hope beyond suffering. The good news of Christianity is not simply that Jesus died, but it's what we celebrate every Sunday, especially Easter Sunday, that 3 days later he rose again. His resurrection assures us that there is coming a day when our greatest longings will be satisfied. Good will triumph over evil, death will die, tears will cease, pain will be healed. I love how J.R. Tolkien, the author of Lord of the Rings saga, expresses this. After the quest to destroy the ring, defeat the powers of evil has been successful, Samwise Gandhi is reunited with his resurrected friend Gandalf and says, I thought you were dead, but I thought I was dead myself. Is everything sad going to become untrue? Yes. Truly, through the death and resurrection of Jesus, everything sad in this world is going to come untrue. And of that day, God promises, I will wipe every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. Is that just wishful thinking? No. Because Jesus is risen from the grave. While there are still many questions about the particulars of our suffering that we don't yet have answers to, what God gives us is not a philosophy, but a person. And the person is not an abstract person, someone over there. The person he gives us ultimately is himself. He has suffered. And if you're here and you aren't a Christian, you're in the midst of suffering, speak to a Christian. I'm sure that they will tell you that amongst even the darkest of their days in suffering, God was there with them too. Whatever you have been through, whatever may lie ahead of you, please don't endure the storms of life on your own. Come to find refuge in Jesus Christ. All of you on your tables, you've got a copy of Uncover. It's Uncover Markets. Mark's Gospel in the front. It's a series of Bible studies in the back. They're a gift for you to take away. We'd love to read that with you if you want to. And we want there to introduce you to this man, to the God-man Jesus Christ, who himself has suffered, who knows what suffering is like, and himself has suffered for you, so in the future you may know a world free from suffering. That's me done, but I'd love to try and answer any questions we might have from the floor.